But right now I want to introduce my first guest, Stacy St. Clair. Again, as I said, this week marks the 14th anniversary of the mass murder of five women at the Lane Bryant store at Brookside Marketplace. It was interesting. I was talking to my producer, and, you know, the younger people just don't remember this. Five women were shot execution style. One woman survived. After all these years, with all the progress we have and the description, we have his voice on audio tape. Why hasn't this murder been caught? Stacy St. Clair is a Tribune reporter, and she has followed this case from day one. Stacy, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
I don't know why this case just really sticks in my craw, because it seems to me that it's solvable. I mean, it just seems to me that there is so much evidence and so much specific evidence that it would be solvable. And before we get to that, why don't you set the stage for what happened in Tinley Park on, when the whole thing happened? Give me the time and set up the place for those of our listeners who maybe don't recall or maybe never knew about this news story.
Sure. It was a little bit after 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning. I remember the weather was terrible. It wasn't like a go out and go shopping day. You really had to specifically need something to get out there. It was sleeting, and there were four women who had gone to Lane Bryant in the shopping center to, one girl had just gotten a job right out of college, and she was looking for professional clothes. And a man posing as a delivery driver entered the store, talked to a couple customers, talked to two employees, and then pulled a gun and said he was robbing the place. He got a couple $100 from the register and then ushered all the women into a back storeroom where he taped them up with duct tape that he had brought, according to the police, and then he ended up shooting them execution style. Five of the six people who he had lined up in the storage room were killed, and the six survived by playing dead, essentially.
And so that sixth woman, her name has never been identified for her safety purposes. Is that right?
Yeah. And at first police didn't even want anyone to know that there was a survivor. They said everybody in the store died. And it was only because a hospital ER doctor, when talking about the case, sort of slipped up and said, one of them had been treated and released. And she's moved out of the state and has never, I don't think she wants her name released, and I don't think police want it released either.
I mean, I can understand that. Before we take a break, let's talk about Rhonda McFarlane, who is really a hero in this piece, if you ask me. Can you tell us in the next minute and a half who Rhonda McFarlane was and what she did that was heroic?
Sure. Rhonda McFarlane was the store manager. She had been a church pastor and then took a job at Lane Bryant after leaving the church, and she called 911 to alert the police that they were in danger and somebody was threatening to shoot them. And, that call in and of itself was heroic, but more importantly, it got the killer's voice captured in the recording. And you can sort of hear him in the background. And no doubt if they ever catch somebody, that'll be a key part of the evidence.
Absolutely. And Rhonda McFarlane actually was one of the women duct taped. So she got free from her duct tape, and instead of running out the door, which probably would be something I would do, she had the presence of mind to make this 911 call. And when we come back, we're going to play that. You can't really hear much in it, but if you call the Tinley Park Police Department, you can hear a version of it that's edited a little bit, so it's a little bit clearer, but not super clear. We're here talking to Tribune reporter Stacy St. Clair. Please stay tuned. We talk about the Lane Bryant murders coming up. Welcome back. We're here with Tribune reporter Stacy St. Clair. Stacy has been with the Lane Bryant murder from day one and has lived through all the machinations of what has been going on in the case. And I first want to talk, before we talk a little bit more about speculation and progress in the case, I want to play an excerpt from the 911 call. It's going to be very difficult to hear this. You're going to hear Rhonda McFarlane, who was the manager, whisper Lane Bryant. You'll hear that at the beginning. And then what you're going to hear, besides muffled tones, you're going to hear actually the voice of the killer who they've never identified. Jack, why don't we play it?
911 emergency.
Hey, Brian.
No.
Stacy is a person who's followed this case as a journalist. Mm-hmm. Have they ever made out any of the words that this guy said?
One of the words they definitely have made out is, "I'm losing it." And I always thought that was very telling about, I mean, he sounds frazzled, right? Like you
right.
can hear, perhaps, it doesn't seem like this is a person who had much of a plan going in. If he was going to rob the Lane Bryant, which is, you know, sort of a strange place to rob in and of itself, why not just take the money and run? Why the duct tape? To me, it's always sort of raised the idea of, was this really a botched robbery, or was it something else?
And if you really think about it, and Stacey, you and I have spoken about this, you know, crimes,
right.
Not to say that crimes always make sense because they don't, and criminals aren't always brain surgeons. But if you're going to rob a retail store, you don't do it first thing in the morning. And I would imagine Lane Bryant's, most of their sales would be credit card sales, and there'd be
correct.
Very little money in the till and very little money anywhere. So to kill five people and to tape them up, and he came with the duct tape, apparently, it just seems like a mixed message here that, you know, did he freak out and kill people because he had to? Why wouldn't he have just robbed the store and run out with the money, right?
I think those have always been the questions that investigators have tossed around in their own minds, right? Like, what was the motive for this? And, you know, is it something else than it, you know, seems on the surface?
And we're going to talk about that in a minute. But before we do, can you give us the description? And this is why I've always been baffled that we haven't had more progress in this case, because we have such a detailed description of the perpetrator.
Yeah, he's between the 6 foot or 6 foot two. He's heavy set. He had black hair pulled back, but one braid hanging down. I think it was the left side with three, what they described as like light colored beads. It was a very distinctive look. They had a sketch out immediately, even though they were denying the existence of a survivor. The survivor helped them almost immediately with that sketch, and then she's gone back over the years to help with the creation of a 3D sketch and other sort of follow up sketches. So if you go to the Tinley Park website, you can see a very detailed sketch there.
Yeah, and you know, even to the color of the beads, and even the description. I apparently was wearing black jeans, and there was embroidery with a certain letter. I mean, it was pretty detailed, and that's why I think everybody for years said somebody knows who this guy is. Maybe some barbershop,
right.
Maybe some, you know, family member. But it just doesn't make any sense that we're anywhere closer, or at least what we think is anywhere closer. But let's go back to this idea that perhaps it wasn't a robbery gone awry. Stacey, can you tell our listeners a little bit about the tangent investigation that went on when they were deciding whether or not maybe it was a revenge murder as to one of the victims?
Right. One of the leads they chased was they went through all the phone calls in the cell phone towers around the Lane Bryant. And one of the calls they picked up was a former member of the church where Rhonda McFarlane had been an assistant pastor. She left over a dispute about finances. That was a dispute that sort of splintered the entire church, actually. And there was somebody from her church who was made a phone call that bounced off of that tower near the Lane Bryant about an hour before the shooting. So some of the church members had all moved to Texas to start a new church, and the task force sent about 11 detectives down to Texas, which should show you how seriously they took that lead, that they would send so many people at one time. And in fact, when we found the Tribune, my colleagues, Dave Heinzman and Matt Wahlberg and I, when we found out they were going down to Texas, we were preparing a story, and the commander from the Illinois State Police, which was running the task force, called us and asked us not to run the story for a few days because they really wanted the element of surprise with the people that they were going down there to talk to. And we did comply with that that request because we didn't want to interfere with the investigation.
And the lead sort of didn't go anywhere, is that right?
It hasn't yet. I mean, they did not make any arrests from that, though. We know from time to time they've gone back and visited the idea.
It's
which is normal. You keep going back,
right,
and looking over things.
Well, and as you know, as an avid crime television watcher, we know that sometimes after many years, nothing really changes except people's relationships. And maybe there's some person out there who knew this guy and maybe was dating him, or maybe someone is on their deathbed and maybe the reward money of $100,000 is looking awful good right now. And all of a sudden there is a conversation, and this is how crimes get solved. And so
it's how the Brown's chicken murder was solved,
that's,
right?
It seems like, you know, if there's a parallel crime in Chicago, that it would be that crime, don't you think? I mean, it was the same type of thing, right? It was a robbery and a number of people killed and a cold case for a long time.
Mm-hmm, right. And then they had DNA in the Brown's chicken. Not at the time, right? When as the science evolved, they were able to get DNA. But that DNA was useless because they didn't know who to test for it. And, you know, in the Brown's chicken, a former girlfriend knew about it. And that was 2002. Yeah, about a decade later, she came forward and said, hey, these two guys are the ones to blame. And that case was solved. So I think there is hope. You know, I think you have to consider they've never talked about whether they have fingerprints or DNA. I find it hard to believe that they don't have one or the other. And if someone comes into the system that would be a hit, or would be a familial, you know, a relative who comes into the system that would be a close match, they could solve this someday.
I believe that too. And also, you know, you don't know where the police are on this, because they do keep quiet. And although it's frustrating for us in the public, mm-hmm. and I'm sure it's frustrating for you, Stacey, because you've covered this case and you talk to the victims and you talk to the family members of the victims, and, you know, you live with this tragedy. But it does seem like the police are kind of renewing their efforts. They probably have never stopped looking for this guy. And just, you know, I mean, I'm not asking you to make a crystal ball projection, but, you know, having lived with this case, what is your gut mm-hmm. feeling? What do you think is going to happen, and do you think it'll ever be solved?
I think it will be solved, and I think it will be solved much in the same way that the Brown's chicken was solved. Someone knows something and comes forward, and then science confirms it. Now, I don't know, you know, when that will be. I don't think you should make anything of sort of the publicity they put out there this week in regards to putting two new members on the task force. That's a very standard police tactic on anniversaries, is to kind of announce nothing to get a little bit of publicity and just renew interest in the case. And it worked, right? You know, all the papers did stories, the TV, we're here talking about it. So that there is value in that, and people talking about it.
Yeah, I do. And you do see that does. I mean, how many TV shows have resulted in, you know, people being found and the perpetrators?
Sure.
being found. It was interesting. One of the police officers, and a couple years ago, I was doing a story on this, and Stacey, I interviewed for this. And mm-hmm. I said, will you come on and just talk about this to kind of renew the interest? I mean, it seems like it's in your best interest to do this. And actually, he asked me what my demographics were of my listeners. And I was like, why? He goes, well, we get so many tips that, you know, if your demographic is not in that area and the people that we think might know, then it doesn't behoove us to do that because we have to chase down every single lead, which I kind of thought, I get it. But I also think, you know, again, not just everybody in one community might be the people who know. It could be someone from prison, right? Who maybe this guy, it was right. not his first robbery rodeo. It doesn't seem like it was either his first one. It doesn't seem like it was would be his last one either, right? I mean,
he seems like someone who would be easily caught because he seemed
bungling.
Quite
yeah.
not have it under control. Right. He was bungling.
Yeah, it's one of those crimes. I have to say, there's a bunch of cold crimes in Chicago. You have the Percy girl, Charles Percy's daughter, that was back way in the 50s,
sure.
and there's so many of them. Even Lisa Stebbik, you know, that name
yeah.
was a
yeah.
household name until Stacey Peterson came along. But I really feel like this is one that's solvable, and really, really, I hope for the sake of everyone and the family members that it gets solved. But Stacey, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm sure you'll continue to cover this case, and hopefully the next time I have you on the show, it will be because we've caught the perpetrator.
That would be fantastic.
All right.
Thanks for having me on, Karen.
All right. Always good talking to you, Stacey. Take care.